So I'm in a Walmart today and they're playing on the Muzak. And I hear Vincent Price going and I go, man, I really enjoyed that song Thriller. Oh, wait, it's Halloween. That seems to be a very appropriate song today.
Oh, yeah. I just got back from trick or treating with the kids. So I've heard the Monster Mash in a couple different versions and Thriller and I don't know, the Halloween theme, everything. It was like 80 degrees tonight here in Vermont. So it's been beautiful. And everybody was out in force for the trick or treating. It was nice. I usually say kids dress like the Gorton's fishermen so you can be dry and warm.
Now, this is the first Halloween we've been in this house and we didn't know what to expect. And unfortunately, we only got one trick or treater and they were carred in from somewhere else. You could tell. Now, the very, very rich area of Birmingham overlooks me. I mean, technically I'm in that area, but technically the big houses overlook me. And so I figure most people drove up the hill a little bit and snatched their goodies. So kind of disappointed the girlfriend a little bit, but she won third place in her costume contest at the bank today.
Well, congrats to her.
I was going to dress as a sales rep for the previous company I work for, which is a competitor for the current company I work for. So, and I thought better of that. Not quite ready to get fired from that job.
Reminds me when I was in high school and one of my buddies dressed up in his Burger King uniform and a fright mask and said, I'm just a Burger King employee. This is what we all look like.
No, I did that really lame thing back in, it was probably 88, 89, and we went trick-or-treating as high school students.
That's way more acceptable now than it was when we were kids. Like, I think that stigma was already wearing off when I was a kid in the 90s, but there were a lot of high schoolers out tonight, and, you know, as long as you're wearing a costume and you're being polite, like, everybody's happy to give you candy around here. We don't actually get trick-or-treaters where I am because I'm on a state highway, so we always drive into town and clutter up the streets with our parking like everybody else.
In Birmingham, there's known places to go trick-or-treating, and these neighborhoods embrace it, and they know 80% of the kids they see are not from that neighborhood, but that's what makes the holiday fun. That and the creepy conundrums that happened with cars over... I was looking for way to make it the three C's there.
Alliteration is the highest form of wordplay. Yeah.
Yes. So, should we jump right in? Do we have creepy stories?
And I have the perfect segue for you, which is we're pretty sure that our Cadillac is haunted by the spirit of its original owner. And tonight, he spit out his AC drive power steering pump belt in a fit of pique on the drive home from trick-or-treating. So I got to drive my 4,000-pound Cadillac home with Armstrong power steering. And let me tell you, the ratios are not advantageous.
I thought you were going to say something like it spit out a set of teeth or something, like the previous Cadillac owner stuffed some dentures somewhere.
No, but, you know, I recall my dad telling me some pretty vivid crashed car stories when I was a kid. And the one that sticks with me is... he needed some part for his 72 Mustang and he went into the junkyard and he found a nearly identical one. And he said there were a couple of handprints in the padded dash and it had been in a high speed front end collision. You could tell from the way it was all crushed up. And like, you know, that's back in the days where seatbelts were an option and people didn't wear them even when they were there. So you can only imagine the injuries that would have resulted from that kind of a wreck.
Well, it just depends how much blood was around those handprints, I guess there.
Well, I'm thinking fractures and internal injuries. I mean, there's a reason I didn't go into emergency medicine. I didn't like Saving Private Ryan very well. So me dealing with car crash victims is no. I mean, let me rephrase. I didn't handle the beginning of Saving Private Ryan very well the first time I saw it. I could probably handle it now that I know that it's coming. But like stumbling upon that kind of thing in the wild, like. I would not be able to handle EMT, emergency medicine kind of thing. Because just, you know, they say the metal dashes in the old cars are so you could rinse them off after an accident because you are the crumple zone. So I could believe that some of these cars that even are still on the roads have got some real traumatic energy still associated, still reverberating through them that could lead to some to some creepy occurrences with them. And I've heard some stories. I mean, I've only experienced what I would consider positive phenomena around old cars, but you know, I've seen some old ambulances in junkyards, like 50s Buicks, and they were really interesting vehicles, but I had no desire to be around them. And I don't really feel that way about hearses, because I figure you're already dead when you're in the hearse. But the worst something happens to you, and ambulances and wrecked cars are two of those places where you can go through a lot and still linger for a while. And
I guess that would lead to a question as we slip into some of these stories. I mean, some are just stupid, scary, some are tragic, some are we'll cover even probably some of the more famous ones, but I want to push those off to the end. But do you believe in ghosts, if you care to publicly comment on that? If you would like to refrain, I understand.
So I will say I'm open to it. I haven't seen any phenomena that I would say, oh yeah, I saw a ghost. But I do believe that we have an energy, and that the longer an item is around a person, the more of their energy it can pick up. And I certainly believe that that can outlive the being that created that energy to begin with. So like, you know, the car we have sat in one guy's heated carpeted garage for the first 23,000 miles of its life. And he bought it to celebrate becoming a grandfather, and his granddaughter is my wife. So like, you can feel Bob, the original owner, like throughout that car at all the time. And sometimes it's because you smack your head on the door frame after you've said something disparaging. You go, okay, I'm sorry, Bob. You know, his initials are on the radio. The radio is cantankerous. Like a lot of old systems can be in old cars, which always lends that haunted feeling to them one way or another. And we always had this joke that if the radio cut out, he didn't like what you were listening to, you know, and sometimes it would eerily reflect what you perceived to be his taste. So, you know,
it's like the beginning of, I want to say WKRP, where the radio changes stations, you know, that's kind of the eerie feeling I get. I realize WKRP's Thanksgiving, not Halloween, but,
you know, full disclosure, I'm familiar with the turkeys out of the helicopter stunt, and I remember the jingle, but I don't think I've ever seen a single episode of WKRP. I know they were in Cincinnati from the jingle, but that's about all I can tell you.
I'm a huge WKRP fan, as a lot of our longtime listeners know. And it's one reason I say I'm a podcaster. There's two people, I'd love to be a radio DJ, but two people inspire me that way. One is a gentleman named Spike Odell, who was a morning DJ when I was young on a local station. And he ended up moving on to becoming the morning show host at WGN Radio for decades till he retired. And the other one is Dr. Johnny Fever, which is Howard Hessman on WKRP. So it's just interesting. And I'll go back to answer my question myself is, yes, I do believe in ghosts and spirits. I have encountered what I believe is eerily true. Her and I have done a couple of ghost tours, and we went to a thing a year ago, and it's in this very known haunted place in Birmingham, and the ghost tour was kind of a bonus. And some of the questions that were asked and answered by others that were personal enough that, you know, we didn't know anybody else in the room, but they were answering questions about things that these third parties should have never known, that only the active participants should have known, being like her and I, secrets with us. I kind of believe that. And my dad built a house back in 2000, nice big place in that. And there were old Indian burial grounds. Abraham Lincoln was supposed to have camped in there. And they had a white lady that would wander around the guest wing in the house. They would get campfire smells in the living room, not any other room. You'd walk out of the living room into the kitchen, and it's a big open area, and the smoke smells weren't there, you know. So it just kind of, you know, can't explain it. So I also believe we did land on the moon.
Right. Well, it's good that we're not, you know, totally credulous, but
yeah, the conspiracy.
Too bad Derek's not here. Maybe he's more logical than the two of us and could provide that needed counterpoint. I mean, you know, Japan is a place that really believes in its spirits. I'm told that I should say I've read on the internet where everything is true. Right. Speaking of credulism, that in certain parts of Japan, if you pick up a ghost in a taxi by accident, it's considered very impolite and thus risking, like, you know, haunting in the negative sense, not to deliver them to their destination and drop them off.
Well, we can tie it right back to the car world and Japan, because Han died in Tokyo Drift and somehow he's alive in Fast and Furious 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. So there's reincarnation out of Japan.
Well, aren't the Fast and the Furious movies out of sequence, like chronologic with their internal chronology? Don't I remember that?
Tokyo Drift was kind of out of place, but once we got into the later ones and the non-Paul Walker ones, that I would say they continue because it.
I think I've missed some Fast and Furious movies. I've got some catching up to do. Like, I think the last one I saw was the one that came out just after he had died in the car wreck.
Yeah, that would have been 7 or 8. And I know I think we're at 10 or 11 now. So,
holy smoke.
Yeah. I mean, did you see the Fiero in space?
No.
See, very realistic movies.
Wow. I'm unabashedly a fan of the Nicolas Cage Gone in 60 Seconds, so I cannot say anything about anybody's taste in movies. On the flip side, I never enjoyed Two-Lane Blacktop as much as I was supposed to. It seemed a little too,
You need to be glad that Derek's not here, because Derek loves talking about Two-Lane Blacktop.
Does he? How does he feel about Duel? Because I feel like those are peas in a pod stylistically. Bleak desert.
I can't remember. We're going to revisit the car movie thing. You brought it up this week. And, you know, the most recent episode we did was 4 or 5 months ago on.
I guess it's on my mind.
Yeah. Cars are movies where the cars were the stars. Now we're going to go back and just talk car movies, but we'll get to that in a week or two. But tonight let's jump into a couple of the creepy car tales that you may have heard, I may have heard, you may have read on the internet, since we know everything on the internet is true and correct, like you just said. But do you want to go first, or do you want me to jump in? Or, I mean, it even can be odd stories that just have coincidences to them.
Well, I want to hear what you've got to say, because, it's Halloween and I've been doing other things. So I didn't do my homework, to be honest. So I want to copy you, but I'm interested to hear what you've got to say on the topic. I'm sure I'll recollect some things as you tell us.
Let's see here. I'm looking for my cursor, but it's I'm going to start with a known one, but it's not overly known. Neil says the Blues Brothers Dodge car had special powers. The Blues Brothers Dodge is ironically, last I know, in Winchester, Stephen City, Virginia, where I used to live, in a farm owned by Dan Aykroyd in his barn.
Nice. But what about Herbie? Herbie's clearly got something supernatural going on.
Herbie was a person. He's not deceased yet. So
Herbie the Love Bug was a person.
Yeah, I don't believe he was. I believe he wasn't possessed. He was an entity. You know, I think this part of the thing, I always feel bad about trading cars, getting rid of cars. I feel like I'm abandoning them. When I'm thinking about buying cars, I will go look at other cars in the car I'm not going to get rid of. And, you know, then I'll, you know, take the other car and get rid of it if I'm trading it or something. I just feel, you know, I don't want to hurt their feelings. I feel they do have personalities. I don't name my cars. That drives me nuts. People who name their cars, we'll get into an episode that's on my topic list now too.
That's a good topic.
But I was going to open with, and I'm trying to think of his whole name, and I'm drawing a blank on the guy's whole name. Well, Jan and Dean.
Oh, yeah.
They're known for a particular song.
Dead Man's Curve.
they should have been, and they were a direct rival of the Beach Boys, one of the greatest rock bands ever.
Jan Barry and Dean Torrance.
Yeah, I'm on the side that the Beach Boys were the American Beatles and possibly even better than the Beatles. But we'll get on that at some car episode. But it just seems to me it's extremely eerie that they make their hit song is Dead Man's Curve. And not only did Jan have a car accident that destroyed it, you know, destroyed the career of the band. They did try to make a slight comeback and they got caught lip syncing in that first show. But for him to, you know, they sing about a Corvette, they sing about a Jag, and for him to be in a Corvette and then have his tragic car accident literally next to Dead Man's Curve, you really can't. I mean, all the places in LA that you could go have a car accident, he has this incident right there at the thing that afforded him the ability to have the Corvette. It's, you know, it's just one of those little bits of irony that the career was made because of Dead Man's Curve. The career was ended because of Dead Man's Curve. And the only reason we talk about it is because of Dead Man's Curve.
Didn't he hit a dump truck or something? He hit a parked vehicle, right? With the Corvette.
Yeah. He hit a parked truck. You know, he didn't drive, you know, fly off the edge or anything. But yeah,
I always wanted to know what happened to the guy in the Jaguar. Like, you know, he sees the Jag fly into the curve and then he goes over. Like, that guy's just dead.
So, you know, all the Jag. But just the guy, I took it that the guy, if I remember the song right, I took it that the Corvette got away and is narrating the story. The Jag went off the edge. And when the Jag goes off the edge, you know, some of those cliffs there, you're never going to bring the cars back up.
Well, he says, the last thing I remember, Doc. So I thought the implication was that he too was involved in the accident, but he was merely knocked unconscious in the process.
Yeah, it's probably one of those things that they went into the corner too hard and the Jag had the cliff side and the Jag took the cliff and he took the rock face that's on the other side of him.
Fun.
Which is a Beach Boy song. Till Daddy Took My T-Bird Away.
You know, Brian Wilson's first number one chart hit was written for Jan and Dean.
I always took it as
with part Surf of City.
That they kind of worked together. I got that feeling they were so alike in things. So.
Well, Jan and Dean were the older, more established act, really. Like they had a hit in the '50s.
I think their career was like 59 to 66 when the accident occurred or so. Right.
And then Dean Torrance was a noted graphic designer after they broke up. He designed the original Chicago album cover.
I'm gonna just say I like that album cover. Dean Torrance is still with us, I believe. I know Jan passed away 10, 20 years ago, but
yeah, from complications from that accident, basically. Yeah. Well, no, that was a real tragedy. Well, you know, like a lot of rock stars, you live fast, die young, leave a mangled corpse.
Yeah. You got one to jump into or?
Yeah, no. So the one that of course jumps out to me then, if we're thinking celebrities is James Dean.
Well, that's the one I was going to kind of push off to the end and little.
Okay. Bastard. Well, we can save the little bastard till the end, but of course that was the one that came up. Of course,
where are they? Man, let's go.
Is Jane Mansfield's Cadillac, is that still around? Tony, our disapproving cat, mentioned Bonnie and Clyde's car in the comments. And
I never took Bonnie and Clyde's car. It showed up in some of the research for this episode. I never took it as a haunted car or a possessed car or anything. Yeah, they got killed in it, but I don't think that's where Bonnie and Clyde hang out is in the car anymore.
No, I doubt that. I mean, for one thing, you know, I think a stock Ford V8 in that era, and they stole a bunch of them, were probably fungible. Like it was like you wouldn't be associated with a particular Toyota Camry just because you got gunned down in that Toyota Camry. You'd probably be, I don't know, associated with that stretch of road or your favorite gun, something like that.
Yeah. Paul Walker's kind of associated with a Carrera GT. So
Yeah, but is the, I mean, he didn't die in one, and
yeah, he died in a Carrera GT,
but it was somebody else's. And is that car still around for him to be haunting?
I don't know if that car's still around, but there's a lot of belief that the recall, the stop drive on the Porsche Carrera GT that took place 2 years ago, and now Porsche's went through and repaired a whole bunch of suspension and replaced a whole bunch of suspension in every Carrera GT, and then issued brand new updated tires to everybody with a Carrera GT. He's there protecting the other Carrera GT owners.
Okay. Well, he's like the patron saint of the Carrera GT. He was a martyr for the car he loved.
Well, a car he died in. I actually think he was more a JDM guy.
Oh, okay.
So Toyota Camry is a good image of purgatory. Hey, I've got a Camry in the garage. It's not mine. It's hers, but it's not a bad car. But I mean,
yeah, but
got a nice refrigerator in the kitchen too. So
imagine sitting in one in traffic until you've purged yourself of whatever your worldly sins were. Like that. That's quite the environment.
Don't tell her I've done that too. The window's down, but I've not.
No. Well, at least you had the windows down. That'd be a little too passive aggressive otherwise. I feel like most of the vehicles that people die violent deaths in, especially famous people, they get wrecked or they get scrapped. But I could see maybe that the JFK presidential limousine does survive, and I think it's at the Henry Ford. It's too bad Derek's not here.
It is. I've seen it there.
Yeah, I know they have quite the collection of presidential limos.
But the JFK presidential death car, the one he was shot in, if I'm correct, it was used at least through the Carter administration, if not even into the Reagan administration. They did put a roof back on the car and did some reinforcement and stuff. But that car served many presidents beyond Kennedy, which is kind of, I don't think we would do that if... Unfortunately, if one of our presidents, I'm not going to say use a name or anything, was to be killed in the beast, I would think they would retire that car in today's world.
Well, and I mean, that's interesting. I mean, arguably, JFK may not have died because of that car, because it did have the bulletproof top. They just didn't use it because I think they sweated their butts off in it.
No, he hated using the bulletproof or the roof. He liked to be exposed in there with the people.
Right. Well, and I mean, that's the era. I mean, we think of presidential security these days because of that, in the way we do because of that. I mean, I remember pre 9/11 going to DC and being utterly shocked and appalled by how security mad everything was. And now like that's just going to the airport. And I haven't been to DC since, so I imagine it's 10 times worse there. But it was like, and it's all just that increasing paranoia, because there's clear pictures of Eisenhower in like 57, like just standing in the back of an open convertible, like waving at a crowd in New York. Like, era. It was, you couldn't protect the president when he was on the back of every observation car at every platform going around the country on his whistle stop campaign or whatever.
Yeah, Disapproving Cat said JFK limo was used until 77. We're getting into conspiracy theories now in the comments. But what I want to go with that is...
If it was haunted, we'd know.
You were talking about 9/11 and that. And I moved to D.C. in 2000. So I experienced everything prior to 9/11. And then I saw all the changes after 9/11. And my mom tells me of a trip she did in the late 90s to D.C. And they walked right up to the Capitol, walked. There was a door. Nobody was around. They opened the door. They walked in. They're walking down staff hallways, and they went to turn in. The only door they got turned away from, they said you couldn't go. Don't go in there, because it was to the Senate chambers and they were in session. But, they're freely walking around the Capitol 5 or 6 years prior to that. And now... I like to comment on the wonderful planters they have around all the buildings now, these huge concrete planters with flowers and everything that are, 4 feet, 4.5 feet tall. And they are actually 4 feet of solid concrete and rebar and about 3 inches of dirt.
Well, I mean, that's... That's not far off from how the entrance to your local Target is protected. You want to get right down to it these days.
Oh, yeah. I was walking into a store the other day and they were removing some of those, whatever they're called. And they had jackhammered like 4 feet down and they still weren't to the base of the thing. So, you know, they're not going to move.
And consider that lobbyists get their name because President Grant used to get buttonholed in the lobby of the hotel where he'd go for a drink after work by people who wanted things. Like, can you imagine? You'd never encounter the president just like in a hotel bar in downtown DC these days. It would be impossible.
I heard an interview with Trump the other day. I think it was during his Joe Rogan show. So I guess that's appropriate. You could talk about it. And he said at one point he got out of the limousine once and started to walk and shake people's hands. And it just drove Secret Service crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But
I bet he's not quite so cavalier about that now.
No, because he was also talking about something he did just recently that was very similar. Because now he thinks he's bulletproof. So.
Oh, okay.
He's been shot once and shot at twice.
The water that softens the potato hardens the egg.
Let's jump. You want to talk a little bit about James Dean and Little Bastard since you brought it up?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I you may know the story more than I do, I know that he was on his way to the races and a guy in a hopped up 49 Ford pulled out in front of him, not realizing how fast he was going. And they cracked up and Dean was the only one killed in the accident. And the remains of that car traded hands a bunch of times and eventually disappeared, right?
Yes. See, and your story is what a lot of people get told. Dean was not speeding. Not excessively speeding. You know, I think the speed limit was 55 or something, and he was supposed to have been going about 60 or so.
Okay.
He wasn't going that fast. It was a glare, and he's in this silver Porsche 550 that, you know, was like probably 36 inches tall, you know, maybe 40 inches tall.
My brother had a model of one. It was a great car.
I used to drive the Beck around when I was at Barber's, and the last 12 inches are glass, and it's just the windshield. It was an issue I had with my Caterham 7 driving it around. I always thought was more dangerous than riding a motorcycle, because at least on a motorcycle, a guy in a Fiero you're at eye level with. Mm-hmm. When I go up next to a Fiero in a Caterham 7 or a Lotus 7, I'm seeing that black strip that goes down the door. I mean, I'm even below the driver in that. So I always thought they were it was a little bit more challenging. But no, the gentleman pulled out in front of him and he never talked about the accident for pretty much his entire life because, you know, he knew what he did. James Dean was the only one killed in it. His passenger survived.
Yeah, and he was somebody pretty well known, right? A famous race car driver in his own right.
No, he was a mechanic, but he was a well known.
Was it Max Bukowski?
I can't remember who the passenger was, and I don't have a lot of notes in front of me on the Dean car. But he bought the car a week before, took delivery of the car a week before, and I can't remember. He showed it to some actor. And the actor said to him, I beg you not to drive this because if you do, you'll be dead within a week. And he died 7 days later in that car.
Wow. Because he blended in with the highway mirage, essentially?
Well, basically, he's driving a gray car on a gray road and the sun was behind him. So when the Ford didn't see him when he turned out. Mm-hmm. And he, if I understand correctly, he crashed basically driver's side front corner into passenger side front fender and front wheel of, I believe it was a Ford station wagon and a Porsche a Porsche today at 60 miles an hour, you're probably still going to sustain some injury. And at that time, I mean, there's nothing to the car. It's aluminum and tube.
Right.
But then, of course, like you said, the car changed hands a couple of times. George Barris ended up owning it, and he lent it to the California Highway Patrol, and it did a tour going to various schools and stuff to demonstrate safety or accidents and encourage safe driving. And at some point in that tour, the car disappeared. It was stolen. Whether or not Barris took it back, whether it was stolen, I believe it was stolen. It's unknown. I've heard stories from some pretty serious Porsche collectors. Some people do know where the car is, but it's one of those. I don't necessarily want to tell you where it is because I don't necessarily want my name attached to it in case it isn't. And I don't want to be accosted to, oh, where is it? Where is it? I want to buy it and the things like that. So wherever it is, it's been very well hidden and, you know, out of sight. But there are parts of that car that still existed. And if I remember correctly, the engine and transaxle were taken and they were put into another car. And that car was owned by, I believe it was a doctor, and crashed severely. And the doctor was either killed or severely mangled in the accident. And various other pieces of Dean's Spider have went on to other cars and have had mysterious issues that have happened with those cars or those ensuing owners. So it's just like that. That car was the reincarnation of Hitler.
or is it Dean sticking with the car and, you know, upset about things? I mean, he wasn't a super happy guy in life, was my impression. Like, a lot of that teenage angst wasn't acting with him, and he didn't even particularly like being famous, I don't think. So see that if his car became a ghoulish attraction, he might want to just go out of his way to eliminate people wanting to be around it.
He had only had one movie in the theater at the time he died. He had one that was just going to be just being released, and he had one he had just finished filming. So he was he was kind of one of those pop-up celebrities. Boom, I'm here. And you know, he didn't die after six or seven movies. He died after the first movie. So he was still, and he was very young. So he was still dealing with, I think, the fame, the fortune, the restrictiveness, because he wasn't allowed to race when he was filming. And that's one reason when, as soon as they finished filming, and I can't remember the order of movies. The moment they finished filming, he went out and bought the 550 and, or had ordered the 550, took delivery of it, and was killed. He had actually ordered a Lotus Mark 10. It might have been a Mark 8, but a Lotus Mark 10. But the Lotus was taking so long to arrive. Surprise, surprise. You know, same problem Lotus has today. They had in 1955. He grew impatient, and that's why he bought the Porsche. Otherwise, he might have had a Lotus and things might have went different. Not that a Lotus is any better constructed, except the motors in front, but in that instance. But, you know, like I said, he finished filming. He was out of that contract, so he wasn't prevented from racing anymore. And he was going to his race. And unfortunately, he never made a fourth movie.
And I wonder how he would feel being so closely associated with the 1949 to 51 Mercury today, given that he was really more of a sporty car guy.
Well, he was that rebel without a cause. So that was the car of the era. And I think if he would have went on, he would have been like a Paul Walker. He would have been like maybe a Paul Newman or a, I want to say Jim Rockford, but who's that?
James Garner.
Yeah, James. He would have been attached to cars, and I think he would have had. I think he would have had a. He would have been a hot rodder, and he would have been a racer. So I did, you know, depending
would,
how
it would we was. Have had Steve McQueen if James Dean had lived past 1955?
We're getting off to a lot of things that aren't cars, but I've heard a very, very solid.
Oh, Steve McQueen is not cars. Please tell me another one.
Well, I'm doing my thing. I've heard a very, very solid argument that we don't have major actors. We have major roles. And James Dean was that role. And then you might say, you could have say Paul Newman, you could say Steve McQueen. We've always had a Steve McQueen. And, you know, most recently that might've been Paul Walker and Patrick Dempsey. And you've always had, you know, your James Gandolfini as the gangster. And now do we have, Colin Farrell with the Penguin? Is he going to become known as the gangster now? Or we have, you know, it's not necessarily the actor, it's the role, and we just slip different actors slip into that position. And maybe James Dean would have survived. Maybe Newman would have never been found. Maybe Garner would have never been found. Maybe Steve McQueen may have never been found.
Alternately, maybe James Dean would have slipped into total obscurity after three movies because his fourth movie flopped and nobody'd think of him if he hadn't died in the accident.
Very, very true. And maybe his third movie would have flopped. I never thought his movies were that great.
But I have seen Rebel Without a Cause. I'm not sure if I've seen East of Eden or Giant. I know
I've read about them both, but I don't think I've actually seen them.
Yeah, and seeing if they were that great, we would have seen them, in my opinion. No. I haven't seen any of Elvis's movies, and so.
No, but I mean, they look like fun for whatever that's worth. I mean, Giant and East of Eden look very serious, and frankly, Rebel Without a Cause is pretty serious. It's like Blackboard Jungle or something. It's like, you know, teens are very troubled, and we need to be worried about that. And it's the car is cool, and I forget who the female lead was played by, but she's quite beautiful and she went on to bigger and better things.
A disapproving cat had commented that definitely don't want dead people's car parts in my car. To be honest, you never know. You go to a junkyard. When I had my 2012 Fiat and I was looking for a motor, I bought a motor a couple hours away and went to pick it up, and they showed me the car it came out of. And I looked at him and he said, "Don't worry, she didn't die." And it was a Fiat 500 with 300 miles on it. It was a part of Enterprise's fleet. The woman had rolled it 8 times.
Oh, wow.
And survived. And there wasn't a blood in the car. I mean, she must have been belted in, and the car did a good job of protecting her.
This was a new one, not a 50s.
Okay. I had a 2012. This was a 2000. This motor was coming out of a 2012.
I mean, rolling a lightweight little car down a hill with all the modern safety stuff built into it, I probably wouldn't be too concerned about that. I'm sure you'd be sore afterward, but. And I've definitely got arthritis in my neck from an accident when I was like 19. So the little things do catch up with you too. But yeah, the threat of death is greatly diminished in the last 25 years.
So do we have another one to jump to?
You know, Patton's vehicle that he died in. He didn't die in it. He was hideously injured in it and died shortly after. This is turning into famous people who have died in car accidents to a certain extent.
Yeah, I was trying to slip a little bit away from that one, but let's see here. Well, this article's got President Kennedy's Lincoln limousine. So,
you know, famously, parts of the White House are said to be haunted. So you could see a car being the sort of 20th century version of the same thing. I've always wanted to hold a seance or bring a Ouija board in a historic vehicle of any kind and see like, hey, can we channel somebody through this thing and who's associated with the vehicle? What can they tell us about it? Right. We had a big old panel truck in the Sibley Museum at one point that would have been perfect because it was a one ton panel with lots of room in the back. You could have sat down with the board, lit some candles, rolled some videotape, turned on your EVP and tried to make contact with the spirits of long dead delivery men.
Yeah, I'd love to know more about this story, and I came across it in the research here, is the Black Volga of Europe. And the story is a Volga.
What?
The Black Volvo of Europe. A Volga, V-O-L-G-A, is a Russian-made car.
Oh, and this was a Gaz.
Yes. They say Satan himself might have driven this thing. It would appear out of nowhere. They say like ram's horns would appear on the car and it would ram things. People would disappear and then the car would disappear and nobody would see it. And then it would reappear. Maybe it's like Radimac of recent history in California, the guy that drove the Tesla and would cut people off on exit ramps and then beat the hell out of their car with a baseball bat.
But oh my God.
He just got out of prison, did just like 2 years, which was really weird. He drove a Tesla. It took them a couple of years to catch him. Doesn't Tesla know where every single one of their cars is at every single moment of the...
I mean, maybe they felt that was a freedom of expression issue. I don't know. I mean, I guess on a level, I'm glad that they didn't just cooperate with the police without some kind of... I mean, because you'd have to have a pretty broad warrant, right, to be like, tell us about the whereabouts of these cars. So, I don't know. That's a whole interesting... that could be an episode in and of itself.
Yeah, a lot of the stories I came across were not necessarily a creepy cars. They were creepy owners, because even this Black Volga, a lot of the people that came up missing were basically children that were kidnapped and never found again after it had appeared. And then it just finally one day disappeared and you never see it again. For some reason, Christine popped up, even though Christine is a fictional story, right? It's not based on...
Right. No, it's a Stephen King novel that was turned into a film. You know what the craziest thing about the novel version of Christine is? I've only read a few Stephen King books, but Christine is one of them, is that Christine in the book is a 1958 Plymouth Sport Fury four-door, which is not a thing that Plymouth actually offered in 1957. You could get a four-door, but not a Sport Fury that way. So it's sort of like, I don't know if it was a mistake on his part, if it was an intentional way of saying, like, this was a weird car from the start. It's very subtle if it was.
I would bet it was an I'm betting it was intentionally done in the litigious society. What do you think of this theory? If he would have named it as the exact car that, say, the movie used or something Plymouth actually produced, Plymouth could have went back and sued him. But by semi-creating a fake car, he had a leg to stand on that, hey, yeah, it's a real name and a real car, but the car really doesn't exist, so you can't tie this back to any other car. Because say he did it with a 57 Chevy two-door Bel Air hardtop, and people would all of a sudden, oh, this is the car Stephen King wrote about. This is the car, you know, and if this one's haunted or something, I would just think it was litigious, or it was just a way to prevent capitalizing on it until when the movie came about, then they could go, they had money backing them and they could go cut a six-figure check to Plymouth and say, hey, we're going to use this car. And, you know, it's 20 years after it was produced.
Didn't that movie come out in the 80s, actually?
Could have been.
Yeah. Of course, Plymouth kept the Sport Fury name around for a long time. I had never considered a litigation angle on it. I'm inclined to not favor it just because of my personal experiences, but anything's possible. I don't know. We should get Stephen King on the podcast and ask him. And, you know, Christine's not the only vintage car he's written about, because he also wrote the book From a Buick 8, which is what appears to be like a 50 to 52 Buick sedan, but is actually a portal to another dimension when you sit in it at the wrong time. And it essentially ends up being about a state police post that like locks it away for 50 years to protect the public without having to like go through official channels. It's an interesting story. I read that one too, because when it came out, it had a clear picture of like a 51 Roadmaster on the cover. And at least at that time, he didn't shy away from saying that it appeared to be a particular model of Buick. But on the other hand, when you got in it, according to the descriptions, it was very obviously not that, because the inside details didn't match, which made it more bizarre and alien. Like, you can imagine, like, you know what a 50s Buick looks like inside. And if you sat inside and like everything was wrong, but not in a somebody did this to this car, but it grew this way. Like, it was a good way, I felt, to make the car more unsettling, because it wasn't just a haunted real object. It was clearly an alien object masquerading as something from our world.
But you want to throw the eeriness really back into that?
What's that?
Was Stephen King not hit by a car?
Oh, yeah, he was. Yeah. So, Thinner came out of that one, I think.
But could that be him demonizing certain vehicles? Could that be just the car world? You know, like you know, a whole bunch of ants get together and attack you? Could that be all the cars getting together and attacking him for bad mouthing a couple of cars?
Oh my God.
wow. Okay. I had never considered that angle. The psychic energy of automobiles is offended at Stephen King and hunted him down with that minivan. Now, they didn't kill him. Was that an accident or were they just sending a warning? Like, next time we'll be back and it'll be rougher, pal.
Killing, you know, my people. Well, it kind of depends. We'll bring Ted Danson into this. Is he going to go to the good place, the real good place, or would he go to the bad place? Now, if he's going to go to the bad place, then it might be worth killing him. But if the cars are pretty certain he was going to the good place, it might be better to make him live with certain bodily injuries and pain.
Wow. Okay. Dude, my Corvair's sitting right here. I don't want to give it ideas. Like, it's always had a pretty happy vibe.
Disapproving Cat did ask, you both own old cars and have owned other old cars. Never got a creepy vibe out off of any of them. Now, you started this whole show starting about your Cadillac that has interesting vibes, correct?
Yeah, but I mean, not creepy because I knew the guy. And so, you know, I mean, he was a grumpy old guy, but he liked me well enough. I used to bring him Rod and Custom magazine and talk flatheads with him. So, you know, we got along and I feel like he's happy to be here. But he's definitely, you know, he's definitely cantankerous. I don't think personally that I've ever owned a car that gave me a creepy vibe, but I have definitely been around them. And even ones I would say that didn't sport like damage, like, I don't know, like in a way they were like a creepy house. Like you're like, I don't know if something bad happened here, but I can vividly imagine something bad happening here. And, you know, you just, I think I, but how much of that is like, you know, if you stick an old sedan delivery in the woods for 20 years after it sat in a yard for 20 years, like it's going to be all stinky and dark and degraded inside and filled with bugs. And I'm like, so I don't know, like, I don't think that I've ever personally encountered a dark energy in a vehicle. But on the other hand, I think sometimes you find what you go looking for too. So, you know, maybe it wouldn't be hard if you were someone that drew a lot of dark energy to yourself. And so maybe I just haven't had the encounters.
Now see, but, I do everything in my life based on gut feeling, and 99% of the time I'm right. And buying cars is the same thing. I get into a car and I know I like it and I feel good about it. I've gotten into some cars, old cars and even brand new or late model cars. And something is just, my gut is something's off on it. So I don't know if, again, as I said earlier in the show, I believe cars are life forms of some sort. And I just don't, if I don't jive with a car or I tell myself lies about a car to convince myself that's the car I want, that's never gone good. Because we can't do an episode without me talking about one of my previously owned cars. I had a 1997 Acura CL 2.2. I bought the car in 2002. I might have referred to this one in our last episode too. And at the time I was commuting about 100 miles a day. This was the perfect car for me. It's a Honda, automatic, comfortable, has a little bit of room, little bit of sportiness to it. 17,000 miles on the car. And I own that car, I think I bought it October. And in January, I was buying my 2003 S10. Because I couldn't stand the car. I lied to myself the whole way. This is what I need. I talked myself into it. I was trading my Miata. I enjoyed the Miata, but Miata gave me a funny feeling one day. And when it gives me a funny feeling, kick it to the curb. And that Acura just didn't sit right with me. And, you know, I got rid of it. And I've really learned that don't talk yourself into a car by really what you want or what you know. And, you know, me and that car just never got along. But other cars that should have been absolute junk or left me stranded, or, you know, it's like the Festiva I refer to all the time. It's a Ford with 150,000 miles on it, and I don't do tons of maintenance to the thing, and it drives just as good as my Mini or the Camry or anything else out there. It's just one of those weird things that you treat the car right, you treat it nice, you know, you don't abuse it. They run forever. And some cars that I've just absolutely loved and I beat the hell out of, they've just stuck with me because I don't know if I really had a spooky car or a creepy car, but I believe every car, like I said, is some sort of being, and everything has a personality, and my gut has to just jive with the personality of that machinery. I mean, Disapproving Cat says something about no ghost in the machine. It's just the personality of the machine.
They acquire, I think, a personality, like humans, a personality that's based on the sum of their experiences. And I can see, you know, I mean, assembly lines are weird places. A car could come off the line with a bad energy. You know, enough guys are having bad days. And we've all walked into a workplace where everybody's having a bad day, right?
Well, it's supposedly Mondays and Fridays in factories.
We want a Wednesday late morning car, please. Everybody is as fresh as they're going to get that week, and yet they haven't gone out and gotten drunk on lunch yet. I think that's an 80s thing, right? They don't do cocaine on the line anymore at GM.
Well, I thought that was DeLorean. No.
Well, yeah, management too, but management got into the cocaine, I'm sure, much earlier than, but you ever read Rivethead? Great book. Guy worked on the truck and bus line in Flint in the 70s and 80s, and just wide eye-opening stories about what it was like to work on an assembly line back in that era, and the sort of like soul-sucking nature of an assembly line job when, you know, because a human being was not born to watch a robot do a thing all day or be a robot doing a thing all day.
Well, I always make the statement that when I was 18, I could have went off and did what I did, or I could have got a job at Caterpillar because I was from Peoria, Illinois, and I could have put the same damn yellow bolt in the same damn yellow hole for 20 years. And now that's 25 years ago, I probably should have put the same damn yellow bolt. But it's not as good as it used to be, but they still have pretty good retirement packages.
Well, and if you had started back then, you'd have been in on the good stuff.
Well, exactly. It'd be 18 to 48. So it'd be 5 years ago. So I could either at this point had 25 years in or had 20 years in and had a nice retirement. But
yeah, my grandfather was an Air Force officer, and that life looked pretty good to me. 30 years and done.
And my grandfather had his contract with International Harvester bought out in his mid-50s and retired when they sold. So they were acquired by Case. Mid-50s retirements. We'll swing back to the beginning of the episode that DJ talked about, Spike Odell. Once he knew he was a DJ and he was semi-successful, he wasn't to WGN yet, he swore he would retire at 55. And that's what he did. He turned 55, and that was his last day on the air.
Wow. Guy must have been disciplined about saving.
He's disciplined about a lot of things, I think. Hell of an artist now. I'm friends with him on Facebook, and he posts some of his paintings. And he does phenomenal paintings, and it only takes him a day. I think he's retired to Kentucky somewhere. Everybody retires to Kentucky that I know anymore.
It's beautiful country. I haven't been there in a long time, but I mean, those rolling grassy hills and all the horse farms and, you know, the chiseled roadsides and everything. I liked Kentucky when I was down there.
There's nothing more frightening than impending pensionless retirement. I thought that was said earlier that spending purgatory in a Camry or spending hours and hours in traffic in a Camry was there was nothing more frightening than. But I'll take the comment either way.
I'm on the die at my desk plan, so there's never going to be an impending retirement. It'll just be one day. They just find me.
Yeah, I'll die one day sitting in a leather chair with a cigar in my hand, and then they'll say the cigar killed him.
Hey, as long as you die smiling. All right. Well, hopefully we find something interesting to haunt if we decide to stick around that way after that reaches us. What car, as a passing thought, what car would you choose to haunt if you were going to have to be associated with something in your second, you know, in your afterlife until it went to scrap or was destroyed or whatever, which could be quickly or could be centuries if guys like Derek get their hands on you.
Ask me that question again.
What kind of car would you haunt after you died if you were going to haunt a car?
I don't like a car well enough to own it more than 1 year historically. I don't know if I could tell you a car that I would want to spend eternity in.
Well, hopefully no car is going to last for eternity, but some of them could be around 100 years from now.
I could go maybe, since I want to die with that cigar, maybe a stripper party bus.
Wow. Okay.
I guess if I was to do it, I don't think you can go wrong with a Rolls.
Everything goes wrong with a Rolls eventually, and usually they're too expensive to fix.
Yeah, but even old, I went and appraised a collection 5 years ago or something, Backwoods, Alabama, extremely rich family. And they had two 30s era Rollses in this barn, and they had a Pierce Arrow and really nice collection of cars, including one of the Mini Mokes. But they were still in reasonably good shape. You know, it'd be like if you chose to haunt a Bugatti Royale. You know, they're always going to be taken care of. They're, I guess maybe that would be the thing. I would want to go back and haunt a Duesenberg or a Bugatti Royale or something that I could be coddled while I'm torturing others.
You just have to find one that isn't already haunted by a previous owner.
And Disapproving Cat says stripper party bus is the right answer.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I've seen too many old buses in junkyards stuffed full of old parts to think that that's a permanent solution to anything. I kind of think I want to haunt my Corvair Herbie style and, like, you know, make it perform extremely well and take care of a series of youthful penniless owners.
I'm thinking of the stripper party bus. I'm still stuck on that one. Even all the right, bus man. Is sitting there rotting out. Just think of all the coked out strippers that died on that bus and that'll be hanging out with you.
This is okay. This is a very unique version of the afterlife, but I can see it. I've been in a lot of junkyards. I can imagine the luminescent, transparent yourself and a lot of troubled young ladies, and could be an interesting way to spend a few centuries as the bus falls apart back into its elemental essences.
I want to comment to Eric because Eric's a good friend of the show, and we had an interview with him a couple of episodes, I guess in the spring, but lost track of the dates, Eric. I'm sorry. Did you guys have one or did you guys have two? I think you guys had two convertible Superbirds. And I'm assuming, or were those real Superbirds or fake Superbirds made into convertibles? Because I caught the one that drove in, and then because they just had the Heritage Preservation event for the International Motorsports Hall of Fame at Talladega. They had the Wing Warrior reunion there, which is a yearly event. Usually happens at Tim Welborn's museum, but this year they had it in conjunction with this Heritage Preservation. And he's saying $45 million worth of cars on the track. You could have $45 million worth of Hondas on the track at Talladega, but
it'd be more crowded though.
Yeah, definitely more crowded, but they had to have at least 20, 25 Superbirds running and driving and whatever else. And former host Sean Yoder running around, and he claimed he had a big wing. Actually, I had the hatch of a Specifica raised, using it as a camera car. But like I said, sorry, Eric, I wish I would have remembered because we would have had you on the show to tout that event a little bit more. But I just keep missing everything by a week. And I don't know. Maybe I'll get better next year. But I've been saying that since the show started in 2017.
Ah, well. So,
see, I haven't gotten better.
Don't put it out so far. Say I'll do better tomorrow. Starting tomorrow.
Yeah, the problem is I keep thinking tomorrow is Saturday because this was the last day of the month. The month closed out for me. Go into a new schedule tomorrow and all my meetings. And for some reason, I've just been ignoring that day exists this week. I keep thinking Saturday's getting, I'm on the right day of the week. I just think Saturday's going to arrive 24 hours sooner than it is.
Well, may they be a merciful, easy 24 hours for you.
Well, any last creepy crawly stories or?
The only thing I could give you would be an airplane story, and that doesn't really fit, and it's a little gory. But I definitely think there are some vehicles out there that have got some trauma associated with them that are vehicles I wouldn't necessarily want in my life. And there are some vehicles out there that have some good energy associated with them that I have had in my life, and I like that. And I've met some old cars that don't have any personality at all, as though whatever was in them escaped or nothing ever attached. My 62 Falcon was a bit like that. Whatever soul it developed essentially as I had it put back together. And hopefully it's out gathering its own soul now.
I just had one cross my mind talking about cars and personalities and abusing them. Back when I was knee high to a grasshopper, you know, my parents had their 69 Chevelle and their 70 Charger. And my mom got rear-ended in the Charger. And if my memory doesn't have it bad, I have no idea how much damage. But after the car was repaired, that car would not start for her. If it just, you know, she could start it, drive to the grocery store, then it wouldn't start, She'd call my dad would show up and start first time he turned the key. So that's just one of those little personality
blamed her.
To a car. Well, she was driving it when she got rear-ended, and the car didn't understand that you're not at fault at her end collision, but the car put her at fault because, you know, guess it didn't like getting bumped in the bum.
So, they're more like animals when they're young. That's why I only drive old cars, is because they've matured.
Well, you say it's an old car, but it was a new car then. My dad just commented true talking about that Charger. So he likes to come back and see, affirm or retell the history the way he remembers it, which is probably more accurate than me. But
we allow fact checking here.
But we only fact check me.
Well, I'm willing to be fact checked. You just got to catch me.
Now, actually, disapproving Cat has fact checked you before. So
that's true, and he has from the moment I met him. That's the kind of stand up guy he is. A real one, as my son would say. Real ones tell you when you're wrong. They're not just yes men.
Well, with that, I'm going to wrap up the show. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you for the active chat room and comments tonight. I think, and I don't know, it's kind of a no driving gloves. We kind of had a topic. We covered it a little bit.
It's just a catalyst for conversation. That's why people are going to like and subscribe our podcast tonight, is because they want to miss this kind of free-form flow of consciousness discussion that you can't get, to my knowledge, anywhere else but here at No Driving Gloves.
Well, we're very unique in the car space. Be sure to tell a friend, you know, if you like it, the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Be sure you subscribe. If you want to leave us a comment, it makes us feel better. It does nothing for the algorithm, no matter what any other podcast tells you. But I'll ask you guys the question next week. But with that, I'm just going to tell you, now it's time you get off your ass, burn some gas, because John is out. I guess Dave's out too.
I'm out too. Sorry, thought we were done.